Welcome back to Home Care U, brought to you by CareSwitch. I'm Miriam Allred, your host. I'm really excited to be back today for part two with Laura Shaw de Bruin. Last week, we talked about the incredible journey of Norwood Seniors Network, a key home care brand in Chicago. For those of you that missed it or haven't listened to it yet, Laura is the executive director of Norwood Seniors Network. She's been in home care for 30 years. She's got great energy, lots of ideas, and years of experience to share with us. So I'm really excited to have her back with us. Laura, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Last week was a deep dive on your journey, your story, the incredible brand that you've built. Today, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about the specialty programs that you all have built. I think that's one of the pillars to your success. And like we all know, building specialty programs is a key part of standing out and differentiating yourself in the market. One of the things that I want to kind of call out here at the start before we get into it is every provider says they provide great care. You know, I provide exceptional care. We're premium quality. We're a boutique agency. I hear that every single day, time and time again. And home care is competitive and getting increasingly competitive, and saying that you're the best isn't good enough unless you can prove it. And I think one of the best ways to differentiate, provide, you know, a unique value proposition is doing that through specialty services that drive tangible or quantifiable outcomes. So that's something that you've spent a lot of time on and built a few programs. So today I want to cover the three programs that are in your purview as the executive director, and those are a mobile alert program, a meals program, and a transportation program. So for everyone that's listening, I'm going to dissect each of those programs that Laura and her team have built, and we're going to learn from her as to, you know, what they are, why they've built them, the value they drive, and some of the outcomes that have resulted in them as well. So Laura, if you're ready, let's start with the mobile alert program. Why don't you start just giving kind of a general overview of what that program is?
Absolutely. So our mobile alert program is the technology we currently use is ClearArch technology, and we have a contract with Mobile Health as our provider. But the great thing about us doing it versus the company itself is that we take the intake, we go to the client's house, we speak with the client, we set up the mobile alert, we order it, we change the batteries, we install it, and we also get reports from the police, the fire department, mobile health, if the battery is low, if they had to use it, if it's a miss button, if they're not using it correctly. So the same group, but it's of us who go to that client's house. So that's huge compared to, having the life alert people go, because they can't, we'll go right away. We'll go that day. We'll go whenever they need us to go. And we know everything that's happening. And with a small office, we could do that. Although all of us are trained in installing the mobile help, we have one person that's dedicated to that. So she does all the intakes. And then sometimes we will share the responsibility of going and replacing the battery or testing it. So I think when we're selling it, that is the selling point, is that you're not going to have a lot of strangers in your house. We care about you. We are trained in working with older people. You know, it's a form of getting our client to know us and to trust us in their home. And as we talked about, it kind of gets us to have more businesses because we're in that person's home, right? Sure. And it's probably the least expensive of our services. And I often think it's probably one of the most important services we offer, because 90% of our clients live alone. So if they were to fall, someone would be notified, And I think most of our clients have fallen once or twice. And some are frequent fallers. And I always say to the families, you should get one of these buttons. It's, a dollar a day. You can't really place an amount on safety and falling, helping. So I love this program. I wish more people would know the benefits and understand the benefits of this program.
You mentioned that it gives you an opportunity to get into the home. Is that the why behind this program, or how did it come about, and what's kind of the core driver of this program, and how did it kind of stem from the home care business?
I would not say that's the specifically the why. I would say the why was it was affordable. And as we're going in people's homes for the home care, not everyone could afford the price of a home care, a caregiver coming in. So we determined that we need another option for people to remain safe. And the mobile help button, as you know, is a good option. It keeps someone safe. So that was probably our why. The second, of course, is to get into somebody's home where you could realize that, this is great for them to use, but there's a lot of food in the house. There's mail piling up. There's laundry to be done. If you are living alone and you might not have a lot of family or friends nearby, you don't really know what's happening in that house. So it gives us an opportunity kind of to see the lay of the land and see what they might need. That would be the second probably purpose. But the first one is to have options that everyone could afford. Lifeline is an option people could afford for most people.
I'm glad you kind of broke that down. I think that's a really important factor to consider when you're considering specialty programs, is listening to your clients, listening to the population that you're serving. And if cost is the issue, or like a pain point, how do you create options that are there to serve them? So you're referencing the cost. I think you mentioned it. Do you mind sharing transparently, what the cost is,
Sure.
maybe to you all and to your clients?
Sure. The cost, it's not a money maker, this program. I will say that, right? Because the cost of the units vary. It starts from $34 a month, like up to $67 a month. And of the $34 unit, we pay probably, I think we pay $25. So it's a $9, revenue. So it's not a lot, but it's not really meant to be a lot. And then it goes up to $67, which are the more ball button, and you have a wristband, and you have a button as well, and it's a sensor detector if you were to fall, and has more voice activated features. So one of the things that was really important to me when we were shopping for new technology was a few things. The ease of it for our clients. If you have someone with dementia and have a life alert button on them, they're not going to remember to press it. So they might need the fall sensor, the detector of that one. If you have somebody with hearing problems, you might need somebody with its voice activated. So there's the what I chose was to select four different units from different price points and different levels of basic. You don't leave your home. You're aware of when you fall. You just need to press that button. To sensor detectors, a little more bells and whistles for somebody who will need that. Or somebody who travels around the country. It works wherever you are. So you could just bring it and it's little. I also looked at, this is silly, but people are embarrassed to wear some of these items. So what is maybe a little bit more cute? What doesn't look so much like an institution, so maybe it's a pretty watch band or a little necklace. Something that we're constantly getting, not the best positive feedback, is the weight of the pendants. Like if you're wearing that pendant around your neck, and we have to think about our population. A lot of those people are more frail, they might have a little bit of curvature of the spine. So adding a necklace is a little bit, it's heavy for them. So I look at those kind of things, and we give options, and then they could choose. Then it's an easy process. They want it, comes in 24 hours to 48 hours when we order from the ClearArch. It comes automatic, comes really close, it comes quickly. And then we have the information that we need. And again, it's us who are the people that are responding, And if the client has caregivers with them, whether it's our company or not, we have a part of the care plan to do tests. So every month, make sure you're doing a test because you might never use it. You don't know. You hope you never use it, but it's nice to have it. A lot of our clients sometimes were in the old units we were using, were pressing it accidentally and it was going off all the time. Just the way it was made and how it laid on your chest. The new system we're using falls more down, so they're not constantly pressing on it accidentally. And that was a big thing because, again, we respond to all those calls. Another benefit for clients who have the Life Alert and for us is if they were taken to the hospital, we will follow them. So gives us an opportunity to check on the client, gives us an opportunity to say, hey, you don't have caregivers, but maybe when you come home, you might need some help or you might need meals delivered. So it's twofold. Yes, we want to check to make sure they come back to us. And two, we offer maybe services to fill those voids when they are not maybe as stable as they once were. So that's kind of the benefits that we have with the Life Alert.
One kind of quick question. This isn't
Sure.
really an area of my expertise, but it sounds like you did a lot of research on these units and vetted a lot of companies, saw what kind of options they have. Just curious, in your research, how many companies were you vetting? Are we talking maybe 5 companies or 25 companies? I'm just curious of like if providers that are going to go down this path, how many companies are out there that are providing these types of technology?
A gazillion. I mean, maybe not, a lot. Funny you said five. That is exactly what I took. I took five. And some of them I actually went to, as I do a lot of my research, I go to different conferences. So there are conferences where there's only technology. So I will go to that, whether it's software or Life Alerts or how to do technology with meals better, how to do different softwares for meals, for Life Alerts. So I did five and I picked up five and then I went to three and then I went to one. One of the reasons why we chose the ClearArch was the customer service of it. We developed a relationship with them. I had known some of the people who worked there prior in another company they worked for. They knew their stuff and they heard us. This is what I needed different units. I needed different price points. They were not aggressive with, oh, you should just have this one or just this one, And again, I could have had 10 options. Well, I'm not going to give an older person and their family 10 options. It's not fair, right? I don't think it's fair. It's overwhelming, but if you get what you think you need, then that's the options I took. And it was a very seamless transition. They did a lot because we had another company. So we had to get out of that contract. We had to transfer all our clients. We had to speak with all our clients. They gave us really good marketing materials. And they also made themselves available if families or the clients wanted to speak with them directly. So it was, it was probably a year in from start to finish. But it's been worth it.
Yeah, that's great. Great context for people who, may be considering going down this path or you're educating them for the first time. Just some of these kind of quick questions are really useful. I want to talk about the people that are using this service. Are they the same demographic of people that you're providing home care to? And is that something, a factor you consider is, we want someone who, maybe needs this service that can then transition to home care, or is this demographic of people using the service pretty different than your home care demographic?
Great question. Of the people that are using our mobile health alert system, 25% are our clients right now. Like they're also getting caregiving, The other 75% are not caregiving clients, not yet. Not sure that will ever be. The demographics don't really change, but what changes is they're probably a little farther out in our meals demographic or some of our caregivers. We have a client in Rockford, which is like maybe an hour and a half away from our office. We have some in the western suburbs. Even though we have caregiving out there, we don't have a lot, but we have more Life Alert clients there. So we're reaching a different distance because When they call companies, so if they call mobile health, we are a provider. So they will give them our name. So that's how we get referrals as well, is from ClearArch's referral system or the main major hospital groups. So sometimes we'll get the call like maybe an hour away in a western suburb, and they're like, "We know you're far, but I'll go out there. We'll install it because there's very little labor for us, right? Unless it's constantly dinging for some reason or not, you know, we might have to go back to make sure the battery is okay or something, but it's low labor, high results. And those are good for us and our little group of people. So we reach, and I'm not really sure what the difference is of somebody, again, they probably will need home care eventually, but I just think it's an option that is, you know, not only less expensive, not intrusive. They might have caregivers with a different agency, but again, that agency doesn't offer life alert systems. We do. Again, that's what makes sets us apart a little bit. And not that we would vet their, you know, their caregiver, but they know that we also do that. They know that we could, you know, do the life alert. It's interesting because of the people that we service a life alert that don't have our caregiving, probably 50% of those people do have some sort of caregiving, but they heard about our life alert in a different way.
I think it's really interesting what you mentioned at the start is it actually broadens your coverage area. You know, like you said, you're actually providing this service to people that live further away, which is, you know, obviously a great opportunity. And if you're willing and able to, you know, make that work, you know, obviously that takes different resources and time, but then it gives you an opportunity. Say you have, you know, maybe 5 or 10 Life Alert clients, you know, in a further suburb, you're going to go and consider, you know, maybe, you know, opening up like a satellite office or sending more caregivers out that way. It gives you a way to kind of test the waters in a new market or a new zip code with a relatively kind of low cost option. So I think that's really interesting. I want to ask about hidden challenges. Now that you've been providing this program for years, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned along the way that have presented themselves as maybe issues or challenges that have come up?
The biggest challenge that I have had, and hope to never have again, was our past life alert company we were using, in the sense of it wasn't proactive, it wasn't reactive, it was hard for our clients to get a hold of them. And then making that switch and telling the families, "Oh, we're going to switch." And we were using that other company for like 10 years, but I wasn't happy with any of it. And so that was a challenge in the fact that our clients would call and say, you know, "I keep calling them, they're not responding. My pendant keeps going off. I'm, you know, they don't have me in the system," or they didn't like. Everything goes through us, and then we pass it on to the mobile health or whoever we were using at the time. And sometimes it was not documented, so it was very frustrating. Billing was frustrating for them. Everything was frustrating. So that was our challenge. Now my biggest challenge is educating the clients to make sure that they charge their batteries. I know that sounds so, but we get a lot of like low battery, low battery, low battery, or we get a lot of low batteries. This unit is great, but you have to charge it every so many hours. So I was on the phone with them, our representative, a few weeks ago, and I'm like, "Work on longer battery times for our clients." Even though I think it's 4 days, if you're wearing it, it's 4 days. I think it's 7 days if you're not wearing it, which people don't wear it. How can you make that life battery longer? That would be something, you know, I've learned. So when I'm shopping, and next time if I shop again, that would be something I would totally look at, because I thought 4 days was a lot, because the other unit we were using, it was not even 24 hours, they were losing their battery life. So I was happy with 4 hours, but you know, again, if you're alone without a caregiver, without a family member, you might not remember to charge that battery. When you have a caregiver, a family member, or we're reminding you, you know, as you know, the last episode we talked about that we're affiliated with a nursing home. And we have several clients in the nursing home that uses them because the nursing home in general doesn't use those. The memory care uses it, you know, more of a wander bracelet, but they don't have to use them the fall. So we provide those. And I can't tell you how many times that I've gone over there and it's in the care plan and I'm asking people to make sure they're charging it. There's hundreds of people around. So it shouldn't be it shouldn't happen, but it happens. You know, that people are not charging. So that's probably my biggest frustration now. And it's not our client's fault. They just don't remember if they don't have someone helping remember. But I think as the technology progresses, I would like to see the battery last a lot longer. That would be my, you know, maybe I could invent something. It's probably there, you know. Again, you don't always want to change what you're doing because the changes are enough. So it's not like I'm going to go change that, but going forward, if something comes up, and they know very well, if there's another unit that has a longer life battery, I'll put that in the mix because then I would try to really sell that because that's a big one. Specifically for our clients who are out and about. Our clients that are more homebodies, it's not such a big deal, but our clients that are out and about and traveling or going to the stores or doing activities, if their battery dies while they're doing it, they have to go back where the base of the battery is. So that's, you know, and I don't know if I thought about that. Like I thought it would last forever. I thought people would automatically charge their batteries.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is really useful information. It may seem kind of, you know, basic or fundamental to you that have been through it, but hearing, you know, anyone hearing this for the first time, it's really useful. You know, a really important factor is, you know, charging the batteries. Obviously, that stems from like educating the family and the client themselves. And that's a whole piece of any specialty program is making sure, you know, they understand the why, the how, you know, the value, the needs of the specific program. So I think that's really great. I do want to kind of transition into our next program.
Excellent.
That was a great synopsis of that program. I think we learned a lot. I want to talk next about the meals program. This is, you know, maybe one of your core differentiators that, you know, is more unique that I've even heard. So I want to talk about this meals program. And you may have to kind of reference some of what we talked about last week, kind of the core structure and the nursing program, et cetera. But why don't you start by giving an overview of this meals program?
Absolutely. So our home delivered meals program stems from the nursing home kitchen where all the meals are made. So they're made fresh every day, 5 days a week. And in the meals program, there are two meals, a hot meal and a cold meal. And you could order as many meals a day as you want. And some people do. If they, you know, some people order two meals a day, 3 times a week. You know, you could do what you want. In the selection of the meals, there's a menu that comes every month with two entrees that you could choose from, and then a desserts you could choose. And then every day you get a hot meal and a cold meal. Most of our clients who get the meals eat the hot meal during the lunchtime and save the colder meal for the evening because then it's hot and it stays hot. Our meals program is run by a manager that I spoke of in our last episode. And he does the menus and inputs all the menu choices, does all the billing, and then does all the routes. And then goes in the kitchen every day for a couple hours and oversees the putting together of the meals. And he's a big part of that. The kitchen the night before does the cold meals or the morning before, early in the morning, puts the cold meals in a lunch bag. And then our hot meals are done right at, like, I would say 11:30, and all the meals are out by 10 minutes to noon. So they're done pretty quick. So and then they're dropped off, and everyone has a route. So we have volunteers who do our routes, and we have about, it depends how many meals. So we could have as low as 34 meals a day delivered to up to 90 meals a day delivered. It really depends on the day. Monday, Wednesday, Fridays are our biggest meal days. Tuesdays and Thursdays, for some reason, are our lower meal days. And then on Fridays, I would say probably 20% of our meals client orders more than one meal for the weekend. The meals are pretty good size. So if you're living alone, you could probably have, get 3 meals a week, and then it'll probably last you 5 days. There's a milk option if you want milk that comes with your meal. We'll do that. The meals are considered heart healthy, and we don't really change anything. You could put, if you don't like bologna, then you could put in, you don't like bologna, and then we'll give you turkey or ham or, and the meals are cycled every season. So that's important to know. So they're not always the same meals. And then, like the colder months here, we have more comfort food, and then in the summer months, they're lighter options. On Fridays, there's always a fish option, whether it's Lent or not, there's always a fish option. And then the menu is varied. And if you're getting meals 5 times a week, sometimes some of the meals might become monotonous because it's a rotating basis. But for the most part, people really enjoy the options. And if they're wanting something, we will bring it to the kitchen. Or if they're liking something, if I'm getting a lot of calls or compliments, it's usually desserts. I'm not going to lie. They'll find this one dessert that they love it, and then they'll put it on the menu more. The menu is dictated through what they're serving at the nursing home, and then we have input in it. So we meet as a team and we see what the menus are. Neil, my meals manager, and I sit down and we look at what's repetitive. We'll try to change some days to other days. So if you're getting your meals always on Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, you're not getting in the same rotation. So we try to change it up. And then the desserts too. Desserts are very important to our clients. So we try not to overduplicate them if they're having the same dessert every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. The kitchen, we have kitchen help. And again, we contract a portion of our budget and pay for the kitchen staff, the supplies, the oversight, but the brunt of the labor is done by our meals volunteers.
Yeah, you're taking that in the right direction. I'm curious about how this program is funded. Like you say, the nursing home is so instrumental, that kitchen, having access to that, you wouldn't probably be able to do this without that. So break down the finances a little bit further as to, where the costs are coming and going and who kind of has ownership over what.
So we contract from the kitchen a percentage of our budget for the meals, but the meals manager salary is out of our budget, as is all the supplies, the kitchen service comes out of our budget. However, it's nice to have a big kitchen. It's nice to have a nutritionist who checks all the meals, who does the heart healthy meals program. So it's kind of comes from their budget, even though it's a very small amount compared to our budget. Every year there is an increase. I'm not gonna, because of inflation of the food. This has been a couple higher years than we've ever had with the inflation, and even not only the food, but the containers that they come in. I mean, there's a lot of, they keep warm, so it's a special container that they keep warm. The container is in 3 parts, so we're not overlapping food. We're very careful of what we're transporting. And this is a side note, but we can't transport soup. Everyone though wants soup, but we can, it doesn't transport well. So we have to look at that. And we have to look at the aesthetics of it. When we're closing the cover, does it look clean? And we're, you don't want to get a meal with gravy coming out. I mean, it has to look presentable. So we take a lot of time with that. We do though, apply for 2 pretty significant grants every year for our meals program to offset some of the cost of the meals. And then our volunteers do this from the, from their big hearts. And but at the end of the year or Christmas time, we do provide them with gas cards. And I usually try to write a grant for that with our foundations person. So we write a grant for that. We just recently wrote a grant this past week, last week, to apply for some more home delivers meals money because the margins are so low. It's not really, again, a big revenue maker. And we really don't try to increase the cost of the meals. I've been here 7 years and we've increased the cost twice, which I think is really good considering inflation has gone up every single year. And it was 50 cents and a dollar. So it wasn't even very, very expensive. And as I talked about in the last episode, it's more than just a meal. So we're doing actual physically checking on these clients, making sure they're okay, making sure they're safe. So it's a great program. And we could not do it without our volunteers. There's no way we could do it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. I love that this program is driven by volunteers. As amazing that as that is, it is also probably a challenge, maybe to find volunteers, to find reliable volunteers. How has that process gone of, finding these people and then relying on them to show up every day?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So we part of our umbrella from the nursing home is our volunteer program, which is called Norvolution. And they probably have, I don't know, 300 volunteers total that help out with this organization. The meals program has 55 ongoing, loyal, dedicated volunteers to the program. They've been with us for a long time. I mean, some come and go, but where there's a group of them that have been volunteers since I've been here. So at least 7 years, right? They have probably volunteered about almost 6,000 hours a year. They have driven over 22,000 miles to deliver the meals. I mean, we are grateful to have those volunteers. So we have a foundations, a volunteer director, Carrie, who is in charge of getting us our volunteers, and she oversees them, but the volunteers, though, report to us if there are any issues. Or Neil and Carrie work together if some of our volunteers call in, which happens, and then one of us will deliver the meals. So whether it's Neil or myself, and I actually love to do that because a couple ways. I want to see how the program's going. I want to check on some of the clients, how they're doing. It's good to have a face-to-face with somebody to see how they're doing. So I couldn't imagine. We have been so blessed to have like these great volunteers. I think I might have mentioned the last one that during the pandemic, they did not take a break. They delivered all those meals every day without fail. No one stopped delivering meals. I mean, we did contactless, but they still checked on the person. They just still made contact with that person. I don't think it's that difficult to get the volunteers because it takes maybe an hour. And we don't have them, one of the reasons why our meals program only goes a 5 mile radius. And that's really driven by two things: the temperature of the meals, keeping them fresh and hot, and we don't expect the volunteers to be driving all around creation. And then that's why sometimes if we have 70 meals a day, we might do seven routes. So you have 10 meals to deliver. And again, it's in a 5 mile radius. And we have software that manages our routes. So it's like how it makes sense. And then they get a route sheet. Some of them put it in their navigation, but we do paper routes because some of our volunteers don't do the navigation. So they have a choice. They could do the navigation or they could do the paper route. And then it will say the name and the number. And then we go from when they're dropping off, how vital it is that they're actually dropping off and they're actually checking in with the client. Because sometimes something's going on. And if it wasn't for our volunteers, our clients, something could have happened.
Yeah, you've said multiple times this phrase of it's more than a meal. And offline, you shared a story with me about quite literally a life saved through one of these meals. Do you want to take a minute and just share that story briefly?
Sure. So it was this past winter. It was a very, very cold day. It was very cold. And we have a volunteer, and he happens to be a volunteer who's been a lot around for a long time. And he rang the doorbell for this client, and he didn't come to the door. So he waited a little bit. Sometimes people take a little longer to get into the door. They don't hear them. They're in the bathroom, whatever. He waited. Then he called us and said he's not answering the door. So we called the emergency contact people that are on his emergency contact list. One happens to be an amazing neighbor, but the neighbor wasn't home, but he did answer his cell phone. And he said, well, I haven't seen him, but I don't always see him, but I'll come home. I'll get home and to help you guys out. And then we called the son, who's in Wisconsin, and he's like, okay, let me try calling my dad. And we call. To no avail. So we called 911. They went into his house. He was found unconscious. The paramedics think he was probably fell that the night before. So he was probably on the ground at least 12, maybe 15 hours. He actually turned off the heat. It was less than 50 degrees in his house. He was in his pajama bottoms and a t-shirt, unconscious. So he actually saved his life because he could have just dropped off the meal, put it between the doors, put it somewhere, and not saw this client. I mean, so it's more than a meal. We actually do a physical look, say hello, see if, and this volunteer always, I guess it's his last stop. So it was this gentleman's last stop. So I guess he always makes sure he's doing okay. They have a little bit of a conversation. So the paramedics came, took him away. So our volunteer went into the house, turned on the heat, cleaned some of the dishes, got everything kind of settled. Talked, the neighbor came home. The neighbor, made sure that everything was okay. This client actually gets a caregiver, but 4 hours later. A caregiver comes from 4 to 8 p.m. So we know this client fell after 8 p.m. So we sent the caregiver instead of his home to the hospital, and that's where, he stayed. And he stayed for, he's in re, went to rehab, but the paramedics are certain that he would not be alive if it was not for our volunteer finding him.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that story. I think that just so perfectly illustrates, more than a meal, going above and beyond that face-to-face interaction for these people that may not see anyone throughout the day. What just the value and the weight that a simple meal and that meal delivery and that interaction can have on someone's life. I think that's so powerful. I think that's a perfect place maybe to wrap up this one. I want to make sure we have time to get to this last program, which is your transportation program. So this is the third one that we want to cover. Give us a quick overview of this transportation program and what service you're rendering.
So our transportation program is that we have a vehicle. We have one vehicle. It's kind of like a sit between a station wagon and a as you know like a utility vehicle. We have one. It's wrapped. So I think I bring up that point because I think it's important that when we come to the door, it's us. It's our car. It's wrapped. There's definitely identifying marks on it. There's five of us in the office that drive. We are the drivers. We will pretty much go anywhere within like Cook County, which is, it's big, it's large, but most of our clients are probably within a 10-mile radius. Since we do charge by mile, I think one of the challenges is that we lose some clients because we charge by mile and it's round trip. So before they even get to their destination, it might be too costly for them. But for the people within the neighborhood, we are busy every day. We have transportation every single day. Before the pandemic, we had a designated driver who did all the driving. Since everything shut down in the pandemic, we lost that. person. And we didn't have a designated driver. And it took probably 2022 for people to get back in our cars. Even though we put up a screen, we did everything we can to make the person safe, but it was still, I mean, again, you're dealing with an older population who wasn't leaving their homes, you know? But people do have appointments and they do have, you know, dialysis and chemo. So some people had to do it. So we try to make it as safe as possible. And again, it's the same people. So we're coming to your door, right? And we're doing door-to-door transportation. I think that's really important too. You just don't meet us at the corner unless you want to, but we go up, we get the person. I would say 80% of the clients that we have some type of mobility issue, whether it be using a cane or a walker or just unstable on their feet. We, you know, and a lot of our clients live in single family homes with five stairs coming down to the driveway, you know, or to the parkway. So we do that, and then we drop them off to their destination, and we take them in wherever they need to go. Some of our clients will say, "Oh, I'm fine," and they're fine to go into the doctors themselves. Most of them are not. So we will take them door to door, literally. We pick them up, and then we bring them back home and make sure they get in. It is so valuable that we do that, even though it takes a lot of time. Sometimes, honestly, the drive is less time than it takes us to walk somebody up and down their stairs. And we make sure they're safe. We make sure they get into their house. We make sure everything is okay. You know, an Uber can't do that. They don't do that. I mean, I think they have a separate part of Uber now that does that, but our staff are trained, you know, they're trained in elder care, they're trained in CPR, what to do, behaviors. You know, if something were to happen, we would take care of it. A lot of our clients who were taking to get like dialysis or radiation or something sometimes have to stop in the middle of the trip and we have to stop and find a bathroom so they can use the bathroom. I'm not sure you're going to get that with other transportation. You know, and we will do that.
Are most of these transportation clients also receiving home care, or what percentage would you say are?
I would say maybe 20% are receiving home care. Because if you're receiving home care, you could have a caregiver who drives. So if you're looking for someone to take you places, then you get a caregiver that would drive. If we can get a caregiver that drives, then we'll take you places. The other 80% probably don't have caregivers or they don't have people who drive them. Yeah, I would say about 80% are non-caregiving. Now, it doesn't mean they can't be at one point or come to be a caregiving client. You know, we have a caregiving client, we have a transportation client who recently signed up for meals. She didn't know about the meals program, but on our wrapped car, it says home delivered meals. And in the conversation, she was asking about the meals program. So she signed up for the meals. So now she has two things.
Yeah, that's part of why I asked the question is, yeah, to my understanding, you know, caregivers can also be a piece of a kind of a pivotal piece in that transportation, but they're, I'm assuming, you know, this was another need born out of
The
clients,
biggest
you know,
need.
the community that, you know, need transportation services but don't necessarily need home care. It's kind of that similar concept of a service that was born out of, you know, just listening to people and providing that service.
Absolutely. And caregiving, you know, traditionally, caregivers don't drive, especially if you're near a city like Chicago, where public transportation is abundant. No one needs to, you know, I mean, coming from total suburbs and couldn't wait to drive at 16, I'm shocked about people who like have never learned to drive. I'm like, well, what do you do? Well, they don't need to learn how to drive, where I thought, oh, you know, be independent in itself. But so a lot of our caregivers don't drive. So it was the biggest need. I will say, tell you a story. In 2019, in about October, I did a needs assessment with a couple local hospitals, home health. We collaborated to this great needs assessment. The biggest need was transportation. I was thrilled. I'm like, well, we have a car. If it continues, we can get another car. We have written grants We've not always been, we had not gotten any yet, but I keep every year I apply for the same grant of getting more of a motorized wheelchair accessible van to use because that's a huge need. The biggest need though was transportation. You know, it's the hardest thing to give up for an older person, but their biggest need. So I was thrilled. And then the pandemic hit. We were busy. We were so busy. I mean, like I said, I had, you know, we had a driver who probably was on four or five calls driving a day, which is a lot considering the time it takes to get somebody from A to B sometimes.
I am curious, are most of these clients receiving multiple rides a week, or what is kind of the typical schedule for one client? Is it, you know, one ride a week or four a month, or, you know, I know it varies, but what's kind of a
Yeah.
typical
I would
schedule?
say most of our clients are frequent riders. We have a client that does radiation. We have a, so it's a couple of times, well, it's a couple of times a week right now. We have a gentleman who does dialysis. So that's a couple of times a week. So kind of putting together that puzzle of, you know, Mr. Smith and Mr. Brown might have a ride the same time. Then one of us will go, and if we can, if time is available, and use our own cars. We have insurance on all of us with our company car and our personal vehicle, and they also insure us, Nord Life Society. So we're covered with that. And then they sign a consent form and an agreement, you know, that we're going to be taking them. I would say very few of our current transportation clients are one-time people. We're constantly doing that. You know, we had a ride today. She probably uses us four times a week on different appointments, a lot of medical appointments. You know, we have a woman who uses us once a month, once a week to get her hair done. We drop her off, we pick her up. But I would say most people are multiple users every month. Absolutely.
Yeah,
What?
talk about the logistics of scheduling this. Are people scheduling, you know, appointments, things? Sometimes they're recurring. Sometimes
Right.
it's sporadic. You know, I need a driver tomorrow for X reason. How, talk about kind of just like the logistical back end of this. Are people reaching out all the time? Is it pretty set schedule? Are you using, yeah, maybe a software to track some of this?
We are not currently using the software. We just track it in ourselves. Listen, the logistics are difficult because the need is so great and we don't always have availability. Again, it's the same group here taking everybody. We kind of look at everyone's schedules. I think I mentioned it last time. We have our favorites. Who wants to take Mrs. Smith? You know, who wants to, you know, take some, you know, we have a client named Bee. Everyone loves to go with her because she's so lovely and she's so fun. And it's pretty much we if someone inquires about a transportation, we send out an email. We update our transportation schedule, and then you kind of choose like if like, oh, I have time, I'll do it, or I could do it. We all take turns. The logistics is that sometimes we have way too many rides and not enough availability. We ask people to give us at least 48 hours of notice. We are not a taxi service. You can't call us and say, oh, can you take us? Not that we don't want to, we just probably don't have the availability. And we, yeah, we would if we could, but we don't. So I think that if it, like, since the pandemic, last month, February, was our busiest month by far. We had a lot of transportation. And I applaud my staff to making sure that we try to help every single person who called. March is looking the same way. We're pretty busy. So maybe we would hire somebody again. But again, you have one vehicle, so you're limited. Unless like I'll drive clients. I don't care in my car. But you're limited. So we would really have to think that way out if it made sense to hire a designated person. Again, not a huge money maker, but this year is the first time that I've increased the prices in 7 years. And I kind of changed the way we were billing because we weren't making, even though we're using staff I'm already paying for because they're here, still we're not making any money, you know? I mean, so I kind of had to relook at that, revamp it. And still, I think we're good value because we are literally door to door. We are safe. It's the same people. We know what we're doing. We're trained. We're just not dropping you off and picking you up and hope you get there. That brings value.
The last question I think I want to ask to kind of round out this program is how concerned or disconcerned are you with Uber, Lyft, some of these other, transportation providers? Obviously, very different structure, very different companies, but do you, lose sleep over them? Are you concerned with them, or do you partner with them if, someone reaches out and you can't do, a ride in 15 minutes? Do you refer them? So just kind of your general thoughts on that.
I'm not afraid, I'm not scared of it. I think we all have a niche, and I think that we have a specialized, specifically that we're very neighborhood friendly, and we've been doing this for 30 years. Maybe not transportation, but we've been around for 30 years. I will suggest to people if they need, immediate transportation, I will say call an Uber, call a Lyft. That's difficult for an older person who does not do apps on their phone. There was a taxi service here years ago, and sadly, the pandemic put them out of business. It was called the Pink Taxi. There were pink taxis. There was three of them in a community near here. I referred them all the time. They referred us all the time. The pandemic took him out of business. I was saddened because they helped a lot of our clients, and they had also a big heart. They would make sure they were okay. So partnering, that would be tough. I know that Uber has like Uber Medical or something, or that they're using, but still, I think it's different. I think we have a different value that we could bring, different reputation. I will tell families too, or call a cab. But most families or clients will say, "Well, is she going to walk me to my doctor's office? Is she going to walk me inside into the lobby?" Probably not. No. And then we will also wait. It's for a fee, but we'll wait. So if they need someone in their office with them, we will also do that. So sometimes that's an added bonus, especially if it's like a quick appointment and they don't have to wait for someone to come back to pick them up, or they have to stop at the Walgreens to get a prescription. We'll do that too. A lot of places will do that, so I think it's good to have competition, but I don't see them as my competition.
Yeah, I think that's a great response. Really differentiated services. You don't really compete, for the same client, for the same experience. But I just
No.
wanted to get kind of your take there. In just our last couple of minutes, I want to zoom out and ask just kind of a couple of general questions. You've mentioned a few times that these programs aren't necessarily, big revenue drivers. So I want you to share, what the value is, beyond what the program offers. What is the value that these programs are driving to the business as a whole?
The value is the mission of our organization, that we are to provide care, nonprofit organization to seniors. And I also think that it gets people in the neighborhood or the surrounding neighborhoods a level of trust. And that is what we do. Yes, if you do the caregiving, it is more of a revenue maker, absolutely. But it also gets people familiar with the bigger picture if they needed housing. So we're kind of the pre, and then they go to maybe assisted living or memory care. And it's still the same organization. The transition is probably much more smooth than a traditional going into a home care because we are affiliated with them. I also think that I know at one point, when we were talking about, because I think I mentioned last time, we did lose one of our programs during our social outings. I hope to get it back. But a lot of our clients say they don't know what they would do without us in those situations. And that kind of keeps you going. I mean, we are profitable most months, but we are profitable in the fact that we are well known, we are trusted. We are a good neighborhood, surrounding area place to go. And I think it's the mission of Norwood Life Society and the mission of Norwood Seniors Network that keeps us going.
Right. Yeah, you said it last week, reshaping aging. That really is the motto of the company, and these programs fuel that motto, giving people options, meeting people where they are, not offering kind of a one size fits all service, but offering them what they need. And then as their needs evolve, you know, you have more alternatives, more options to share with them. So I think, you know, this is really great to dive into these programs. You've spent a lot of time and effort, you know, probably kind of the blood, sweat, and tears in these programs. And so I think it's great for you to share what you've learned, how you structure them, you know, some of the value that they drive for other agencies that are considering offering these programs or just, you know, vetting and thinking about specialty programs in general. I think this is a great, you know, foundation for people to get a taste of them. So thank you for sharing everything so openly and transparently. I know you shared some really specific things, and I think it's great for people to know what they're getting into with some of these programs.
Yeah, thank you.
Any last advice or, you know, insight that you'd share with someone that is, you know, considering adding a specialty program and has reservations? What would you share for kind of an owner in that seat?
I think that if you know there is a need, that you should explore it. I think that nothing is not worth exploring. Doesn't mean you necessarily have to implement it, but explore, you know. Like when we were looking to redo our social program, I reached out to like 100 of our clients, and there were maybe three that would do the social outings right now. So it's not worth it. So you have to know what your needs are. So if you do like a mini needs assessment, or like when people call us, we track every single call. So if they're asking for something, like really listen. Like if they're looking for something specific, really listen. But I would say try it, or try at least investigate it, at least research it, because I really believe having these additional community-based programs are keeping people in their home, whatever that means, as safe and comfortable as possible. And I wouldn't give that up for the world.
Mm-hmm. You're such a great example of, you know, listening to clients. You have advocated for, you know, home care pulse surveys, for feedback, for closing the loop, just you are, you know, kind of embody that concept. And I think that that's a great tie into this concept of listening, you know, surveying your people regularly, asking them what they need, asking what service they need that you don't offer. And that can be a really good indicator of, you know, what people want, what people need. And that can, you know, kind of light the fire of what programs you should start and the why behind them. So Laura, thank you so much for joining me last week and this week. We've covered so much good information. You've shared so much, and I really appreciate you, all you do for your market, all you do for this industry. I know you've been, you know, kind of an advocate, a chair on different boards for this industry. And so you've done a lot, and we just appreciate all that you do.
Ah, thank you. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you back again next week. Laura, thanks again.
Thank you.
That's a wrap. This podcast was made by the team at CareSwitch, the first AI-powered management software for home care agencies. If you want to automate away the menial of your day-to-day with AI so that you and your team can focus on giving great care, check us out at careswitch.com.